News Talk 1340 KROC AM. Good morning. I'm Andy Brownell. Rochester Day today on a St. Patty's Day with Tom Ostrom back from assignment. Now that's traditional Irish music. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Andrew.
All right. No Irish in you?
We were well, yeah, there is. In my wife, but I don't have any green on.
I know.
And Brent Ackerman spotted it, and you're half Irish, and you don't.
I know.
We should be ashamed.
I am ashamed, actually. I didn't realize it until I came in the door, and I went, oh, my goodness, yeah. I can't believe. But I honestly don't really have any green in my wardrobe either.
Oh, okay.
Which, yeah, I should have at least a green tie on or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
well, my mother would be very, very angry at me right now, and my grandfather. So
okay,
I'll have to be shamed for the rest of the day.
Yes,
but my heart is in it.
Good.
Let's put it that way.
Good.
I was amazed to see that I saw a listing of the most common ancestries of U.S. citizens, and Irish is number two as far as bloodlines are concerned.
Uh-huh.
It's tracing back to the great migration.
Oh, sure.
Occurred, yeah.
The British, and they're the British heritage, the United Kingdom,
yeah, that
Irish.
Would, that would be the top. Yeah. British bloodlines are the top.
Yeah.
And then English.
Huh. Okay. Well, English are British, too.
Well, the Irish would take exception to that, by the way, that you would connect the British and the Irish. I know they're on the
Northern Ireland is part of Great Britain.
I understand that. But,
the Southern Ireland is free. They would take exception.
Exactly. Yeah. Trust me, they'd take exception. Okay, Tom, what do you got in that mailbag?
Look, I asked Criticus, he's a computer wizard like you are, and I said, Hillary says she won't release her servers for inspection. If we had a real Department of Justice and State Department investigation free of Obama machinations, the server would be subpoenaed, wouldn't it? The hard drives, whatever. And Criticus said, there's no need to subpoena the server. Hillary and Bill are masters at destroying evidence, and this machine or its contents have been wiped clean. Great show Tuesday, Thomas. You were on fire there for a while. Hillary is to truth what Stalin was to mercy. And then he knew we were going out of town to Wisconsin to celebrate Mary's birthday. And he said, have an extra scoop of cheese for me while in the eastern territory of the new right-to-work state and Governor Walker.
Man, oh, man, we haven't really talked about Wisconsin either. And wow, if you want to see a transformation of a political landscape over a period of years, I think Wisconsin, for people who study political science, is going to be... there'll be a lot of theses. Is that that's not thesis, is the plural, right?
I'll let you get away with creating a word.
What is a
I would say theses, but theses? You might be right. You're often right
know.
When I didn't. But anyway, go on
you
with your kudos to Wisconsin.
Dissertations.
Ooh, wow.
There you go.
Wow, there you go.
Written about, you have this state that was in a lot of ways, considered the birthplace of the strong public employee union movement in this nation.
And the progressive movement and Governor La Follette, you bet. That's their heritage, blue heritage.
And so all of a sudden, you have this state where it's now a right-to-work state. You have some of the most difficult situations as far as the power of public employee unions to negotiate are concerned, as far as the laws that were passed. You had elections take place where the union forces nationally threw everything they had at this guy. I mean, they brought in the biggest artillery they could bring in. That this was their Waterloo in a lot of ways. And they lost. And I've read articles now on the landscape over there. Union membership way down.
Yeah.
Across the board. You have people who... especially in the teachers' unions and some of the other public employee unions, now that there is no requirement that they pay the dues, they're just dropping out of these unions, and the union halls are empty in a lot of ways. And it's just an incredible transformation.
It is.
Over a period of 4 or 5 years.
It is. And what it was, too, was people who who had jobs in union-affiliated arenas had to pay union dues, and those that did pay and were members are dropped out. And the Wisconsin school systems are the beneficiaries. The school systems have surpluses. They're hiring more teachers. But he is hated. And the thugs that threatened his life and that trashed the Capitol and that went on his lawn at home, he's just so cool. He's not afraid of them. But his life was threatened and all that. It's still a blue state, although the Republicans control the legislature now. And he's on the campaign trail. He's got a cool demeanor and an articulation and principles that appeal to people. He's number one and two in lots of polls. Now, people say he hasn't been to college. Well, I know a lot of college degree people. I wouldn't want to be president. I'm one of them. And but the point is, he's a competent, experienced, successful administrator, and I think that's what the next election will require in a president after the one we have now. And they're going after him. He hasn't been in college, and he's changed his mind on some issues. But when you do that, liberals think it's growth. If you change into their category, Obama's changed himself on issues too. But his appeal is striking and surprising.
If they are going to use the college issue as a major slam on this man, I've always tried to point out strategic political mistakes. For the Democrats, that would be a strategic political mistake. It will turn off more people than it turns on. Although the base might work for their base, but for those who are the undecided voters, that has the hint of snobbery that you cannot
relate
to it.
It is elitism, snobbery, and it insults the blue collar folks. It insults lots of people who are very smart. In fact, college bored them, which is why they left. And he left a lot of famous and wealthy people dropped out of college. So you bet it's elitism. It'll backfire.
Now, what's going on over there now is, I said now in the same sentence twice, but the higher ed institutions, he's proposed this budget, and there's a firestorm developing over there between in the college campuses and the college faculties as far as his budget for higher education. He's proposed some significant funding cuts, but on the other side of it, he's proposed that they would have more freedom,
autonomy
in how they decide they spend their money. And I was talking to a person who was educated, and this is not my kid, by the way, in the Wisconsin system, who is gainfully employed in Minnesota now, who happens to be a member of a public employees union, and he was very colorful in his language in describing Mr. Walker, and it was an interesting conversation to have, and out of exasperation, he said, "Why would he be doing this?" I said, "Well, because you guys went to war with him. There is a cost to war." You guys in the unions, and he drew battle lines as well. It was a full-on offensive by both sides. And there are winners and there are losers. You lost that battle, and now you're whining because you're going to pay the cost of losing that battle. If you had decided to work with him and find ways to accommodate some of his priorities instead of saying, no way, we're going to just go for the throat, perhaps this wouldn't be happening. But you know what? When you pick a side that strongly and the other guy wins on that side, there's going to be payback.
Well, there is. In Illinois, the same way. It was bankruptcy involved. It's taxpayers tired of paying more taxes. It's these pension plans and everything. Illinois is doing the same thing with a Republican governor. And private sector union people are sick of the public sector union people, too, who hog the trough, who get the benefits, who have the security, and the private sector union guys and gals work hard, and they are kind of second rate, third rate. He struck a nerve, even among workers.
282-1234, Tom, I know you might have another mailbag, but we have a call as well. Good morning, you're on KROC.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, I'd like to make a couple of comments, and they're related. And the first is about the Democrat elitism. Do you remember when the popular Democrat motto was, we're going to be the new Silicon Valley and we're going to have nothing but PhDs and high incomes and all this wonderful stuff?
Now we want welders and truck drivers.
We need them.
Yeah. You're making my point, because all of our legislators and many of the legislators travel up 52 to get to the Capitol. And if they remember, there used to be a very large employer just before you cross the river on the left-hand side. It's called American Hoist and Derrick.
Oh, sure.
And I used to work with those people, and I don't recall meeting any PhDs. I do recall meeting a lot of people who purchased homes, supported their families, enjoyed a good life, and worked productively. I think that the Democrats are missing their major group, which is the, you know, supposedly the middle class. They're kind of targeting away from that sometimes, and it seems kind of odd.
It does.
Well, you know what? You're right. You know, they are losing white males, and they're losing blue-collar workers in these elections.
It's interesting, too. I had a talk with a guy locally in the trades here, and he said that in many of the trades, construction sector, they are desperate for workers, that the average age of their employees, the journeymen and the masters in these different trades are, you know, they're nearing retirement age. They're mainly in their 50s now. And this young group of people that need to be moving into this profession, the stream has run dry because of the education policies that we have that have discouraged these young people from pursuing that. And he said these positions require an ability to think through problems and quite a bit of math is involved in these issues.
Well,
and they're having a hard time filling these positions.
They're right. I'm so proud of Rochester Community and Technical College. I taught in the liberal arts area, but there's a strong vocational technical area at the Heinz Building, and the great infrastructure jobs there, and their classes are full, and their employment rates, job successes are high.
The pay's
good. That's what we need. People who can do those things.
You're mentioning one of the two losses of that population, that potential population to fill those voids, and there is a very real void there. The first is, most public schools do one of two things. The first thing that they do is you of course want to go to college. Of course you do. You know, and whether or not they really have the aptitude for that, that's kind of a gold star on somebody's forehead if you get people to enroll in college. The second and more insidious is in Chicago, for example, 50% of the high school kids drop out. And they are certainly not of any value in the trades or in the high-tech arena, either one. So it's kind of a two-edged or a two-ass failure.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because if properly presented, you could have, instead of this idiot that shot the two cops down in Missouri floating along as a gangbanger, he could be a tinsmith. He could be a welder. He could be,
cement worker. He could be
whatever he could do.
Sure, carpenter, everything. And, you know, Michigan is going to be, you've got a Republican governor there, too, trying to square away the debts and the problems, largely because of public sector unions that have driven the economies into the ground.
All right, guys, I got to take a break.
Yeah, and have a good day, gentlemen.
You too. It is now 36 in the downtown at 24 past 10 o'clock, and I have such wonderful news to share with you, Tom Ostrom. The root beer stand location for Roscoe's Root Beer and Ribs open today. Today. Well, it's a little cool up in the beautiful sunshine, and it's got the south exposure, so it's going to be nice and warm at the root beer stand. And along with the opening of the root beer stand is the return of the world-famous Roscoe's Fish Fry at the 4th Street location. So there.
That's right.
And I hope I made your day.
You certainly have. And there's some indoor seating there if folks don't like the wind. And Roscoe's does everything, catering, special occasions, gift cards, graduations. They can handle it all with their wonderful barbecue and the beef and the pork and the good sides everything's there to remind you of summer, and that A&W context architecture brings back that good old days.
It is spring. This is the sign of spring. The Root Beer Stand location for Roscoe's Root Beer and Ribs on 4th Street Southeast is open today.
Weather Eye Forecast on News Talk 1340 KROC AM.
It's brought to you by Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine. Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Center offers comprehensive sports medicine services. Discover their state-of-the-art facility at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Mayo Clinic is changing your game. We're looking for a high today, mid to upper 40s. Overnight tonight, down to about 28. Tomorrow, chance of some scattered showers and a high back into the mid to upper 40s. There's a chance of a little rain mixed with changing to snow. Maybe a dusting of snow Wednesday night, low 32 degrees. And a chance of a rain-snow mix again early on Friday, Thursday, but a high of 50 later in that afternoon. Then partly cloudy and 52 on Friday. A cooler weekend, upper 30s both Saturday and Sunday with sunshine. Right now, downtown sunshine and 36 at KROC AM. It's already 28 minutes past 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, St. Patty's Day. I'm Andy Brownell along with Tom Ostrom, and you can join us as well at 282-1234. And Tom, we have a caller who's been on hold far, far too long. Thanks for holding on. Good morning here on KROC.
Hi, I was going to talk to you about unions a little bit.
Okay, we got about a minute and a half.
Well, the biggest thing is without unions, we wouldn't have child labor laws, and we wouldn't have it so that the company store where you actually, if you worked for a company, you actually had to buy from them, otherwise you wouldn't have a job. We wouldn't have the minimum wage. We wouldn't have the 40-hour work week. If you don't like any of that stuff, the biggest thing is I see is they're trying to push, because you're union, they're pushing that union is bad. Union's been the forefront of all good at one of innovations that basically have protected the worker, and you've lived longer and safer and everything else. On the other hand, there is unions that have not done their jobs, and management hasn't done their jobs to keep unions under control. If you just give a blank check, they'll take that blank check. But if you look at police and fire for like Rochester and Resto, they put their own money in. It doesn't cost you nothing for that one there. They put 11% of their income, or close to 13% of their monies into that pension plan.
Although
that's what they're on.
Okay, but although the salary and the money that is received by the member of the union is a taxpayer funded position.
Well, let's put it this way. With the fire service and city roster and stuff like that, what we had the highest basically return for the money because we have the lowest insurance rates because the firefighters do such a great job, and that goes with the police department.
Joe,
so
okay.
It's actually a free service.
Joe.
If you want to hear any more about it, but I swear you cut me off early. But
no, I'm not going to cut you off. I got to do a break for news, but
if you want to call back, I'll call you.
No,
back
no.
Some more numbers to figure.
Joe, you just got to. You got
some unions are good and some unions aren't.
Joe, you got to stop for a second.
Yeah.
Okay, just take a breath. Actually, in my opinion, if I were to predict something down the road, you know, 10 years out, I think there's going to be an upsurge in union activity in this country. I think that what has happened, you know, there's always a pendulum that goes back and forth, and right now the unions are getting beat up pretty bad because and my theory is that they got too far into bed with one political party, and now they're paying a price for it, and
nope.
I think... I know you're going to disagree with that. I'm just offering it as an opinion.
About a second. My opinion is it's the haves and have nots. I don't have a pension. I don't think you deserve a pension. But the guys worked for it, and they actually got it. If you look at what IBM did, IBM had people with pension. If you got at 30 years, you got a pension. At 28 years, they fired you. Everybody that I knew that I grew up with that actually went to school with me worked at IBM. The ones they got fired usually at age 28 to 27. Service, and they never got a pension. That's with a union, it never would happen.
Okay.
Well, you know,
okay.
Joe, I taught American history, and I did mention what you said about the contributions unions have made to productivity and to safety and to fairness and to protection of workers' rights, and I agree with all that. But it's gone too far. You got unions pumping money. Let me finish now. You got unions pumping money into the politicians that make their decisions, into the school boards and into people, and that's wrong that union money goes to one party and to the people that support the unions, the politicians that make the rules. It's gone too far. We got deficits, budget problems, everything else, and private sector unions are getting tired of being secondhand. And I don't know why these illegal immigrants, the unions don't know what to do with them. They say, if we take them, there'll be more workers. But the illegal immigrants are lowering the wage scales and taking jobs, entry level jobs from blacks. And I don't know why unions support that.
Okay, I got to take a. You got. I'm going to give you 15 seconds, Joe, and then I got to take a break, okay?
Well, the biggest thing is we've educated these illegal aliens. They have that same education as your and my kids are right there. why don't we use them, make them legal, and make them pay the way a society pays Social Security? Right now, people can take those people and basically blackmail them to work for them for a lesser wage, and that's really, really wrong. And this has been going since the 60s, so it ain't something that's been on the, this just showed up.
Okay.
They're talking about it. Thanks.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thank you, too. Yeah. Thanks. Oh, boy. It's 36 in the downtown. We have to talk about our friends really quickly. Not too quickly, but Carol's Cup and Carol's Corn in the subway level of the Kaler Grand Hotel. And we always talk about the popcorn, but we don't forget, right across the way, they also have that delicious frozen yogurt, self-serve. You choose how much you want. You choose what toppings you want. You pay according to how much you want. It's perfect, and it's delicious. That's also in the subway level of the Kaler Grand Hotel.
And that Carol's Cup is open in the subway from morning until evening through the week, and on weekends from noon until evening, or from 3 until evening if it's Sunday. And then they can open the popcorn shop for you on the weekend, too. And, of course, they're noted for the popcorn, world-renowned, certainly nationally famous, as people come from all over and get that wonderful popcorn and all of the varieties and kinds and ship it out, take it out, put it in those cans. So you go down there to the Kaler Subway, wonderful yogurt, healthy and tasty, and all kinds of popcorn.
All right, that's Carol's Cup, Carol's Corn. Again, they're in the subway level of the Kaler Grand Hotel. News Talk 1340, KROC AM, 37 degrees, downtown Rochester. I'm Andy Brownell, along with Tom Ostrom. It's Rochester Today on a St. Patrick's Day. And 282-1234 is the number. And I know, Thomas, we've got a lot of stuff we want to cover today as well. But we actually have a full phone bank, including a caller who's been on hold through the news break. Good morning. You're on KROC.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, it is.
I just wanted to call in to point out something which I think is so outrageously hypocritical and almost amusing, if it wasn't so serious. Mr. Netanyahu came over here, gave a speech at great political cost besides everything else, but he's been a warrior, and I don't mean wanting to always fight, but a brave man his whole life if you look back at his career. He knew it might cost him politically, but he knew that the future and the safety of the world, particularly the United States and Israel, would be at risk with this deal that Mr. Obama would do at any price for his own legacy. And I think it's incredible how many people on both sides that I've talked to agree. The point is that they were all upset about that, but now we find out that prior to Obama's prior to Mr. Netanyahu giving his talk, the Obama administration has people over in Israel undermining Netanyahu and helping the opposition parties. There was a $350,000 grant that was given to an organization called One Voice, which is supposed to be a nonprofit helping in vague ways in Israel and the United States. This was passed on to an anti-Netanyahu group called Victory or V15. This group supports adamantly and aggressively the defeat of Netanyahu, and they make no bones about it.
All right.
Not only was the money provided, the opposition to Mr. Netanyahu was led by five people from Obama's campaign, including one of his very top leaders, Jeremy Berg, and also the previous ambassador from Israel, Ginsburg. So, in a short summary, he's complaining about one thing with Netanyahu while he, prior to the talk, was already over there undermining Netanyahu's re-election.
That's right. And then he said that he didn't want Netanyahu to talk to Congress because it would be interfering in an election. And as you said, he's got his minions over there interfering in Netanyahu's election because Obama doesn't like the competition. He doesn't like to be disagreed with.
And this has been reported, I wouldn't say in the mainstream press a lot, but it, certainly in the and the more conservative publications.
Sure. And who knows more about the Middle East, Netanyahu or this this community organizer
okay.
we got?
So the other day you wrote a column, and and we do this once in a while, and I post them on our webpage at carolcam.com, and you can find them there. You can either just do a search, type in Tom Ostrom, or you can it's Tom's Soapbox, I like to call it.
Yeah.
And you've kind of, not that specific topic, but you certainly talked about the Iranian situation and the Middle East situation in that latest posting that we did the other day.
Well, yes. President Obama's got a contempt for Congress. He's ignoring separation of powers, checks and balances. He wants to have an agreement with Iran that's not a treaty so that the Senate can't act on it or comment on it. And yet he's going to go to the UN for approval for whatever treaty. Even Secretary of State Kerry said such a treaty is non-binding, and that's what the 47 senators that the Democrats are so mad at wrote to the Ayatollahs, that, yeah, this isn't binding, and if it's a treaty, you got to come to the Senate, and we should be part of this, advise and consent. And they talk about Republicans intervening with foreign policy, and I mentioned that the Dear Commandante level and Senator Kennedy and Senator Harkin and others intervened with Reagan's foreign policies and talked to the enemy, the Sandinista communists, and sent them a letter of support. And Senator Sparkman and George McGovern visited Cuba to thwart Ford's Cuban policy. Ted Kennedy sent his minions to the Soviet Union and even talked to the KGB to thwart Reagan's policies against the Soviet threat. And Jim Wright promised the Nicaraguan communists his support. And all of this. And Nancy Pelosi, for crying out loud, the former Speaker of the House, went to Persia or to Iran and supported the Syrian dictator Assad to thwart Bush's anti-Iran policies. And Nancy Pelosi called Assad a reformer. So you've got all these people, some went to Iraq to stick up for Saddam Hussein. Senator Rockefeller did, and telling him how he can thwart Bush. So those were interferences with foreign policy, and people don't remember it. And Republicans aren't good enough debaters to bring this stuff up against the hypocrites. And one more thing: in 2008, Senator Obama was in a campaign mode. He sent emissaries to Iran telling them, don't negotiate with George Bush. Wait for me to be elected. Just like Obama said, wait for me to the Russians, I'll give you a good deal. Politics has never stopped at the water's edge.
No, it hasn't. And whereas I actually think I disagree. I mean, I'm not going to strongly disagree with it, but I think in the overall, I think they made the wrong move by sending that letter. I'm going to give you an example why. I know you don't, but this is one of the reasons I think why. You had Hillary Clinton emailgate dominating the front page, and the focus was on what was happening with this server and everything else. And you took it right off the front.
Yeah, that's fine. This letter has educated the public. It made Kerry have to admit that this agreement's not binding. Well, if it's not binding, who cares what's in it?
But see,
and it taught the public, which Netanyahu taught them, about the dangers of this Iran and are appeasing them in a sham game. No, I think it's done good. In fact, the Iranians approached Kerry and said, what is this? Is this true? Is this treaty that we might give you a non-binding? Are the senators right? Can it change with a new election? No, this was a civics lesson.
Okay. I will also say this, that the reaction from the other side and the use of the term treason and traitor was way an overreach. Number one, this letter was not sent directly to the Ayatollah. It was an open letter put out in the media that was global in reach that the Iranians would have access to, but it was not a direct communication with the Iranians.
So, yeah.
And to use the term treasonous and traitor was...
Sure, because the examples I gave in history, you could well say that then in those cases.
All right, 282-1234 is the number. Good morning. You're on KROC.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I'd like to comment on unions for a second.
Okay.
The percentage of private sector workers who are union members right now is 6.7%. Public sector is over 35%. And one of the problems with public sector unions, like in Milwaukee, when Scott Walker was elected, the teachers in Milwaukee were not paying a penny into teachers' retirement. It was totally funded by the Milwaukee School District. In California, the BART employees, Bay Area Rapid Transit System, they don't pay anything into their retirement. They don't pay a copay or a nickel for medical benefits. And the thing is, I agree about the pendulum swinging, but you can't have public sector employees who don't contribute towards their medical benefits where there's no copays and they must pay something into their retirement, or you're going to bankrupt a municipality or a state.
Yep. And I also would like to point out, when you say that there are public employee unions that contribute to their pensions and their medical care, you have to understand as well that the salary that they are receiving that pays those contributions is from the taxpayer and from that government entity. So all the money ultimately comes from the taxpayer.
Well, not all of the money. Like, I believe in Wisconsin now, it's mandated that teachers, out of their pay comes a contribution right. to match the public contribution.
But I guess my point is their pay is coming from the taxpayer.
Oh, true, yeah. True.
And the other, Tom and I were talking about this during the last break. The differentiation most often is lost in these discussions is when you have the public union and the private union. The worker in an automaker, an airline manufacturer, you name whatever role it is, whether it's in the trades, they face constant competition. So there's always a check on how much power they could have over the negotiating process. Because ultimately, if they negotiate too wealthy package for themselves or too extravagant package for themselves, their employer will end up losing business, and they would likely lose their jobs in the long run. So there's always going to be at least a competitive balance there. You don't have that on the public side. There's no competition to restrain the demands of the union, other than the elected official who often receives a contribution from that union during campaign season.
I also think that in Wisconsin, the reporting of what happened was a bit skewed because Madison would be like the Berkeley of the Midwest. And I think in Wisconsin, a lot of your private sector workers looked at the benefits and pay of the public sector employees and said, wait a minute, these people are making more than we are in terms of pay and benefits. We're going to support Governor Walker.
I think you have a good
point. Oh, sure. And they pay more toward their pension and their medical plans, yes.
Right.
And
all
there's
right.
only so much money in the pie or whatever. I think I mixed aphorisms there.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks
you
a lot
too.
For your
Thank
call.
You.
And when I was talking about the pendulum swinging, as far as unions are concerned, I think that the future upswing in union membership is not going to come from the public sector. It will come from the private sector
sure.
because I think you're going to see we're already starting to see a manufacturing return to U.S. soil in a lot of ways. And it's going to take a while for the education system to shift and start filling these trades positions sure. and the non, as you would call, PhD positions. And I think those will long-term result to an increase in union membership.
I do, too. And the private sector people do need the protections. They do need better benefits, as the private sector union members. The public sector is well-financed, well-protected, well-paid. Well spoiled up, and I agree that private sector union workers need more.
All right, we have another call to get to before we take a break. Good morning, you're on KROC.
Yeah, I wanted to give you a possible heads up. I got a call last night, and it was an automated paper, whatever you want to call it, and they said that they wanted me to take a survey, and so I said fine, and so they said the first question. I don't remember that they identified themselves as a group or anything like that. The first question was something innocent like, do you believe that your vote should count when you during an election? And naturally, you would say yes. The second question was something like, now my mind just went blank.
It happens to me. I've done it too.
Something about, do you believe that every vote should matter or should count towards the election of the person who is the popular vote?
Oh,
something like that.
I think I know what this survey is about.
Well, I said, and now I'm talking to a tape.
Oh, okay.
And you're supposed to say either yes or no. And I said, well, yes. All right, no, I didn't say yes. I said, well, every legitimate vote. And the person, the tape, came back and said, you need to answer yes or no. And I said what I said. Then the third question was something about, do you believe that in Minnesota we should change to a system where the person is elected by the popular vote? And I said no. And then they said, oh, thank you for your participation. We will stop now. So I assume there, if I'd have said yes, there would have been another question.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, what I got to thinking about later was, could this possibly be the Democrats? Because
no.
way back when Gore was running for president with Bush, and they had that count, their big deal was, well, the popular vote, the winner of the popular vote should be the one who is elected.
I'll tell you, I think I know what this is about. There's an organization in the state that is one of many, I think there's up to about 30 of them nationwide now in individual states. There's a group out there that is working to find a way to amend the U.S. Constitution that to revamp the way that the president is elected, and it is nonpartisan. I actually had the people on the air about a year ago talking about this when it was still at the grassroots level, and it is very intriguing to read their evidence of how this might be a better way to do it. And if you look at it, it truly isn't a Democratic or a Republican issue. It is actually a way to circumvent some of the what many of us would view as the corruption of Washington, D.C., and it points out who benefits from the current system and who gets hurt by the current system, and the results are pretty darn surprising when you look at it.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah, and it's the Electoral College versus flyover country versus the huge urban areas that control too much. But anyway, well, thank you for your call.
For
we have
call.
Some
well,
other things
a minute.
That we want to...
Can I say something else?
Real quick, I got to take a break.
Yeah, I know you do. I'm leery about changing it because, number one, if you're going popular vote, they're going to visit the big states. They're not going to be visiting us.
And actually...
Number two, all the corruption and vote fraud that has occurred... with the Democrats, because of Acorn and all these other things, you've got to be concerned about that, too.
You should always be leery. I agree with you on that.
And we can't have an ID identification, for voting.
But you need to educate yourself on the issue beyond this.
I'm
going to bring in
There are big, big, glaring things saying, no, you keep the Electoral College, because at least then everybody is hopefully... somewhat in the same boat.
Okay. I got to take the break, okay?
No, thank you
thanks.
So much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. It's 37 at the downtown, and we have to take a break at KROC AM. We'll be back in just a moment.
Now, your Weather Eye forecast on News Talk 1340 KROC AM.
It is brought to you by Farm Bureau Financial Services. With insurance, enough is enough until it isn't. Ask a Farm Bureau agent how a super check can help you get the coverage you need. Learn more at farmbureausupercheck.com. High today, mid to upper 40s. Overnight low near 30. Tomorrow, chance of rain developing and a high again in the mid to upper 40s. We could have a little bit of rain-snow mixed tomorrow night with a low of 32, maybe even a dusting of snow. and a chance of that rain-snow mix into Thursday morning. Cloudy Thursday with a high around 50 degrees, partly cloudy and 52 Friday, and then a cooler weekend, highs in the upper 30s both Saturday and Sunday. Right now, 37 in the downtown at KROC AM. Thomas Ostrom here. I'm Andy Brownell. And Tom, I don't have the website in front of me, but very quickly I want to mention, I think that caller was referring to a survey by a group that is Every Vote Equal, a state-based plan for electing the president by national popular vote. And I think if you Googled Every Vote Equal, I have this book. It's probably about 800-900 pages here that I'd read and had a guest on. And I think you'd be surprised at some of the findings. They run counter intuitive, let's put it that way. And you, Tom, we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left, so I'm going to let you run it.
Okay, thank you. We mentioned Hillary Clinton and the trouble she's having with Emailgate. Now there's a problem, and this gets back to credibility and transparency and everything else. Hillary was required to sign a document claiming she turned over government documents and State Department information and official business. The State Department can't find the document she was required to sign, like all people are when they leave the service. In fact, a State Department spokesperson said, well, she's not like every other employee, but that's going to haunt her. And then Hillary's email, it was her Muslim advisor, Huma Abedin, and Cheryl Mills, her longtime friend, that told her to set up the computer system this way to protect her information. And now there's a rumor Obama advisor has leaked all this. Valerie Jarrett, the power behind the throne from Chicago to Washington, is said to have leaked this stuff on Hillary Clinton's email scandal. The Obama folks don't like Hillary. She's too middle and too hawkish. And so the White House is scrambling with that one.
It is Machiavellian, isn't it? The intrigue of Washington, D.C., House of Cards type stuff. All right. See you Friday, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. It's 11 o'clock. News Talk 1340 KROC AM Rochester.